The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
We welcome you back. 2 years ago, the last time we were here, we had our next guest on, and it was supposed to be about a seven-minute segment. I think it lasted, seems like it lasted 2 hours. And we followed him with Ric Flair, which was the most bizarre, surreal thing I've ever experienced. Jeff Foxworthy is back, and it's great to see you.
I will tell you the funny thing about doing your show. I go do the Tonight Show or some other late night show. I don't even get a text from anybody. I do your show, and like 500 texts on the way home. And how's, well, you did Feinbaum, so.
And people don't realize how frustrating that is because, I mean, yeah, we all know who you are, but you still want somebody to acknowledge.
Yeah,
like one, your family
one person
members.
To go, yeah, your mom to go, nice job, you know. But
okay, I don't normally like to bring you down into our territory, but something happened last night, and I missed it, and I'm catching up with it. But for a guy that has made a living making fun of Southerners, I wanted to ask you about a guy who grew up on the other side of Mystic River in Boston. He spent most of his career in the Midwest, last 12 at Notre Dame. He's been a citizen of Baton Rouge
for an hour and a half.
And last night, was it my imagination or was he trying to speak Southernese at that basketball game?
It was like when I first started going to New York to do comedy, like I had to learn to talk like this, right? Not for knowing which way we're going to go. Because when you get in a cab and you go, hey, can you take me to Times Square? They're like, oh, yeah, we'll go to Times Square, my friend. We must go over bridge first. So, but his was, that was bad.
Can you imitate Brian Kelly trying to talk?
Something about our family down here in Baton Rouge. I'm like, who is this dude?
He may never overcome that.
No, I'm just glad he didn't try to go Cajun because, you know, my wife's from Louisiana and she has Cajun relatives that I can't understand. They come over to visit and the kids are like, hey, Mr. Joe, you think it'll be all right? We'll go to the north side of the house and get that truck and go up down and do that, huh? And I'm like, yeah, okay. And an hour later, my wife's like, did you tell them they could jump off the garage roof? I'm like, hell, I might have. I don't know what they're saying, so.
This is not fair to have you early in the show because I'll be wiped out here in 15 minutes. So, as you've made your way, to say that you're world famous, but in the South, what's your ear for the different dialects?
Oh, it's very funny because in L.A. they think Southern dialect. And I'm like, there's no such thing as, you know, because Tennessee's different than Georgia. Like Tennessee, they wash their clothes and they pick flowers. I have relatives in the low country of South Carolina, which it's almost like a little bit, oh, yeah. It's that Geechee, it's a little bit more of that Cajun kind of thing. And then New Orleans, I mean, there's a lot of different Southern accents. And so, yeah, I remember the first audition I went on in LA, they wanted a funny, skinny Southern guy. And so I thought, well, I got a shot at this. And I went in and started reading and the lady stopped me and she said, no, can you do a real Southern accent? And I'm like, and she was wanting me that, hey, y'all, hey. I said, well, that's not a real Southern accent. And anybody that's from the South spots that a mile away.
Jeff Foxworthy was it. Jeff, I know you've got a gig tonight, and I know it's fun to be back on the road. So how did you spend COVID?
Trying to listen to my wife talk. I learned very early, Paul, that I'm not qualified to be the only person she has conversation with because she could talk three dogs off a meat wagon. it was a job. But the cool thing is I did become a grandfather over COVID. And I don't know how my daughter pulled it off, but somehow she got on the Jerry Springer show. And we were able to find out who the father is without spending one dime of our own money.
So Jerry saw that.
Not real. We have no idea who the father is.
Well, how's the father and child, the mother and child?
The mother and child are doing great. First boy in 58 years on my side of the family.
Really?
Yeah. So, and his dad is a Notre Dame fan. So literally every time I greet my grandson, it's, Go Georgia Bulldogs. I've got to get the Notre Dame out of this kid.
That's too bad. Maybe they'll meet.
Yeah.
Probably not happening. But so, I mean, I still think, and I've grown up with you, even though we're from the same generation. So what's it like to be a granddad when you're...
I'm an old dude. I love being here. I had no idea I had this much untapped love inside of me. Yeah, I kind of wish I'd never had kids and just had grandkids, you know?
Because with him,
with a lot of trouble. Because with him, the answer is always yes, which is not the case with your children. But it's good, and you know, I'm happy to be back on the road. It's happy to be out at sporting events.
When you finally got out there, because some people. I was listening to Howard Stern the other day. He still hasn't left his house.
Oh, wow.
No. So everyone has not experienced what we're doing, but that first time you got back up on the stage.
It was funny. I'm one of those people, probably like you. You're the same off the camera, off the set as
boring.
You. And I... But I am too, and so I've never gotten nervous going on. But that first couple of times, I'm like, wow, I haven't done this in so long. But here's what I've always said about laughter. I don't think laughter makes people's troubles go away, but laughter's the release valve that keeps the boiler from exploding. Laughter and live music, and you think about all during COVID, the two things we didn't have was live comedy and live music. So people had all this stress, and they had no relief from it. And so I found as soon as I got back on the road, people were coming backstage and going, oh my God, I can't remember the last time I laughed like that. I needed that so bad. And so you feel like you're almost doing a service for people.
Was it scary at all? Because, I mean, I've spoken to groups where they're all masked, and I'm like going, there's no way to see, and as a comedian, you have to see their faces.
Yeah, I tried a few early on where they had masks, and it was like,
you just said,
I'm like, forget it, I'll
forget
wait.
COVID, you know, it doesn't matter, I've got a show to do.
And so being able to see their faces, that I even tried doing it virtually, and it was horrible, because what makes comedy fun is that give and take, that interaction is, I'm saying it, I see you laugh, that spurs me to go somewhere else. And so the masks were horrible for that.
Yeah, I didn't want to see another Neil Young concert virtually. I
mean, right?
All those, I mean, everybody tried, and I don't blame them. It was nice of them to try to entertain us, but they weren't.
No, nobody was entertained. And especially for the performer, that thing you get out of performing live is you kind of get your energy from the audience. That's the thing that kicks you. So as a comic, you're telling jokes, and you don't hear a soul laugh. That's unnerving.
Is the audience the same? Because I know some people are doing COVID jokes, but I don't want to hear a COVID joke.
I kind of found real early on, and I always assume the audience is right, they didn't want to talk about COVID. As I had written some stuff about COVID, and they were like, nah, we've had enough of that. Let's go talk about something else. Yeah, right?
I mean, I know you're going to Tennessee in a couple of minutes to do a gig. When you're doing your routine, I know you could reel off a million jokes, but is it the locale? Is it the times? What are people? How do you measure it?
You always are, at least for me. I walk up there kind of with an idea of where I want to start and kind of an idea of where I want to finish. But you're kind of always reading them, and that's why virtual was so hard. Is you're going, are they younger? Are they older? Are they more conservative? Are they looser? And so I'm always like doing a litmus test, trying to figure out, which way do we need to go with this to make this the best experience for you? Because that's what comedy is for me. It's that connection, So I got to kind of figure out who you are before I can connect with you on something.
And so many comedians now, especially late night, it's very political. I know you've always gone the other direction.
Well, I have, because I had friends that were political comics, and I would say to them, whichever side they were on, half the audience hates your guts as soon as you're up there. But here's my feeling, Paul. I think if you took somebody that was pegging left politically and somebody that was pegging right, and we sat down and we talked to them about what they wanted out of life, what they wanted for their family, I bet we would agree on 85% of the same things.
Right.
Now, politically, we don't focus on the 85% we have in common, which That's what I do as a comic. What do we have in common? We focus on the 15% that we don't have in common, and we beat heads about that. And people have kind of lost the ability to laugh at themselves, which, hell, you might be a redneck jokes. That was me and my family. There was no research going on. I wasn't having to come up with this stuff. But I was laughing not at somebody, I was laughing with somebody. I'm like, yeah, I got a sense of humor about this. I, you know, my family's not very sophisticated, but we have a damn good time. So
I'm so interested in people like you because you've been so successful in so many different eras and mediums, and you're at a point in your life, you've just gone through COVID. What, I don't want to say what's left, because but because comedians go on until
they're thankfully fixed. Unlike athletes.
Yeah, I mean, comedians are literally carried out to Forest Lawn. But what is there? Is there something out there you haven't done?
I've never played a serious role.
Okay.
I wouldn't mind playing. I could be a cowboy for one scene, and somebody shoots me, and I fall in the water trough. And but no, I love what I do. And I said that to my wife over COVID. I said, how many other people have been doing something for 37 years and they miss it and they still love doing it? And so, man, I'm so blessed that way. And I get to do different things. I create games and write books and I paint, I draw. So I'm never really bored. But if I had to pick one, I would never hesitate. It would be stand-up. I just love that live thing, you know.
Okay, I don't want to write the jokes here, but we have a football game tomorrow. And you know, if Georgia wins and goes on, then all the jokes of the last 41 years go out the window. But it just seems like if they don't and don't pull this off, the jokes are already written, aren't they?
Well, it's not just Georgia, and you're right, but most of the people that live in Atlanta, you know, we still have the Falcons.
Are they still here?
Yeah. But we still have that.
I'm sorry. I don't know if Arthur Blank owns this building. I can't think of anything other than blowing that lead against the Patriots.
But that's what I'm saying. So you have, you know, the 28-3 Super Bowl lead that we blew. You had Georgia 2nd-26 in the national championship game. And so we've had so many scars that even on a year like this, where people outside of the Georgia circle are saying to me, oh, dude, y'all are going to kill him. I will be watching the game by myself in a chair, you know, like this. I mean, until we get past, because to me, Saban's the greatest college football coach of all time. If you think back to that 17 game, it took a lot of cojones to put in a true freshman at halftime. I think until you cut the dragon's head off, the dragon's always going to be the dragon. And I think I hope that's what we do tomorrow.
So,
I mean, you look at it on paper, this team is different. This team is, it's older. And if you look in all collegiate sports, basketball, baseball, football, teams with older players, it makes a big difference over, you know, some of these basketball teams where it's the one and done years. And this team, I could see it. I went up and watched summer practice. I'm like, they're different. This is a lot of player-led stuff up here.
How nerve-wracking are they? Well, I mean, this year there hasn't been anything other than the Clemson game. But if suddenly Alabama's up 10-0 in the first quarter, are you on the floor watching this?
Oh, yeah, sure. I'm probably under the couch. But, you know, we went up to Tennessee, and Tennessee came right down the field drive and went right down the field. And I went, oh, wow, this hadn't happened to us. How are we going to respond?
Right.
And we came right back and punched them right in the mouth. And so we did respond to that. So I hope this team is veteran enough. And, I mean, they've been through this stuff before, that even if Alabama steps out first, that they keep their composure, which is what they've been coached to do.
And well, give me a call tomorrow if things aren't going well. I'll cheer you up.
Come over and maybe feed me under the couch or something.
Yeah, I'll be right here. I'll zip out to the house, you know, wearing a houndstooth hat.
Oh, I sure hope you don't have to do that. It's our turn. I heard Booger say, if not now, when?
Yeah,
you know?
He did.
And I think that's right. I think we've been disciplined. These players, whenever you have a team that tells the coach, you don't need to say anything, as players, we're going to close the door and we're having a meeting. Even when you're winning, that's a good thing.
Before you, I just got you a role. There's a sitcom making its way through Hollywood right now about this show, and you might be the perfect person.
I'm in. Can I play you?
Yeah. Well. Yeah. We had a younger guy in mind.
Oh my gosh! Now I'm being typecast, right?
Maybe the dad.
I did shave the mustache for COVID because I had been married for 36 years and my wife had never seen me without it. And she looked. She took one look at it and said, "Wow, grow it back."
I can't tell you how much fun this is for me.
I know it. I hate it. I have to leave. I always enjoy seeing you.
I don't know why somebody hasn't thrown us together. I guess I do know why.
Somebody needs to throw us together.
Can you imagine?
That'd be a great gig. Yeah. And I always feel better. I watch your show because when you start getting deep into the call-ins, I actually feel better about my own family.
Jeff Foxworthy heading to Tennessee as soon as we wrap up. Jeff, thanks for coming.
Always good to see you, buddy. Thank you.
The one and only. We'll be right back. Mr. College Football is next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
We're back, and I don't know how you follow Jeff Foxworthy, but we're going to. When Jeff Foxworthy immediately jumps off the stage and says, Tony Barnhart, you know we've got a good second act here. Tony, how are you?
Doing well, Paul. Yeah, you don't want to follow children, small dogs, and Jeff Foxworthy when you're on the Paul Feinbaum show.
I'm trying to remember who it was. I think two years ago LSU was here. So we had Jeff was here, and it turned into an hour comedy fest, and then Ric Flair comes up.
Ooh.
And Rick sticks around for 45 minutes and tells a story of almost dying. And it was 90 minutes like I've never seen before. And then I say, welcome back. Scott Rabelais is joining us from the, and Scott said, I have never been more, I don't know what I can say.
How do you follow that? Indeed.
So let's talk, yeah. Tony. And you know, Jeff was joking about it. And you're a Georgian. You went to Georgia. You've lived this thing. You remember the last time 41 years ago. And where is this program?
It is knocking on the door. It's been knocking on the door. It knocked on the door in 87, 88, in 17, 18.
Right.
And it's knocking on the door again. But you know what? Until you walk through that door, you're never going to get. I have a lot of family members that went to Georgia, and they want to know, when are we going to get the respect we deserve? I said, when you win the game of consequence for a championship, you will get all the respect that you deserve. And now is another opportunity. And, hey, Georgia's favored.
They are. And, yeah, of all the time they played, now, I don't think you could have made a great case in 17 or 18 for Georgia, but you can make a pretty stupendous one right now.
Well, the way the defense has dominated, 6.9 points per game. I told somebody yesterday, Paul, the two best defenses I've seen in doing this for a long time, 2011 Alabama, had a ton of pros on that defense. And 2001 Miami, ton of pros on that defense.
Exactly.
Georgia has a chance to beat the scoring record of both of those defenses if they play well down the stretch. Just, I had a chance to talk to Coach Vince Dooley. He said this is the best front seven that Georgia's ever had because all of them will probably get drafted.
Right.
And he said the key is, we didn't have that kind of depth in the 80s. This team has that depth, and that's the difference.
Talking to Tony about this game, if for some reason Georgia finishes the job in 3 or 4 weeks, the program's already been very relevant, but mm-hmm. it's kind of 3, 4, 5, somewhere more 4 to 4 and 5 than 2 and 3. What do you think it could mean for the intermediate and long term, if there is such a thing anymore in college football?
Yeah, good point. I think Georgia is set up now for a nice run because they recruited at a very high level. They have a head coach who is absolutely relentless when it comes to recruiting. And all the resources are there. I mean, they've done an incredible job building facilities and things. So Georgia's going to be in the mix in the foreseeable future anyway. But a win gives you a certain credibility that sets you up for a real nice run.
Tony, I want to get off the game for a second and have you reflect back on this week because you're one of the most influential people in college football and have been for as long as any of us can remember. And this week has literally turned the sport upside down. Yeah. What are your thoughts?
I am very disappointed in the way this week has gone. I think all of us who are involved in the franchise that is college football need to have a pretty serious discussion about some of the things that we're doing. We've spent more time this week talking about coaches leaving on very, very short notice for incredible money. I don't care about the money. That's not it. The money is what the money is. But college football should not be about this. We should have been spending all of our time this week talking about this game and all the other great games that are going to take place and all the coaching carousel stuff. We could do that next week. To me, Paul, it goes back to the early signing period. The early signing period has upended, changed everything. And I think we need to have a serious conversation about that. It's the unintended consequences of the early signing period.
But most people in the sport were in favor of it. And you know, once you get something approved, to undo it is pretty tough.
No question. But I think what has happened this week should warrant us at least having the discussion. But, I'm the first to admit that.
But Tony, I'm curious because I asked Greg Sankey about this, and we all know his position in the pantheon of college football. But you know, these guys can't get anything accomplished these days,
yep.
And I worry if something like this, which is important, but it's. But it's probably behind a couple of the other issues like saving college football last year and the CFP. I have no faith in the leadership to be able to sit down and find their way through it.
But the leadership has got to step up, Paul. I understand where you're coming from, but it's got to step up because we can't go through this. This is not healthy for the sport, what
right.
we've done this week. Now, one of the issues, of course, is that we don't have an overall person overall commissioner looking out for the good of the sport as a whole. But my hope is that we're going to look back on this and say, we don't need to go through this again. We really don't.
No, I'm with you 100%. I just, I'm so pessimistic that everyone has their own fiefdoms now. And I think because of the Texas-Oklahoma situation, you know, Greg Sankey was isolated as somebody who was trying to
right.
damage the sport when really I think he's probably tried to keep it together all these years as much as anybody.
And once again, the commissioners met yesterday and couldn't get anything
yeah.
done. I mean, everybody, I think we're all in agreement that the playoff needs to expand for the good of the sport and all the people who are part of the franchise. But we can't seem to get the people to agree on it. And I don't understand that.
anyway, it's frustrating. We'll have more time in the future to hash it out, and I really would like to get your thoughts on a solution to it. Tony, good to see you. Thanks so much for dropping by. Tony Barnhart joining us here on our set. We're a long way from the finish line, but what a half hour this has been with Tony and Jeff Foxworthy. We're coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
And we are back. We're live in Atlanta. What a show it's already been with the commissioner, Jeff Foxworthy, Tony, and funniest man on SEC Network, Roman Harper.
I thought you were talking about yourself. Go ahead. Paul the GOAT.
I never talk about myself.
I know. That's the problem. You should talk about yourself more and the things that you have created, this caravan of the Feinbaumers, how much pride they take in being called one of those. It's a good thing, Paul.
Well, congratulations, Roman. You picked South Carolina to win on the last week, and Clemson used it as motivation. I hope you feel like you've ruined Shane Beamer's life.
You know, the thing about that was Shane Beamer in South Carolina was so excited that I went out there and put them out there, and they were like, oh, thanks. We noticed that. We understand it. We really appreciate the love. Clemson took that same video and used it as motivation all week long. And if they don't believe it, I got the video to prove it, but yes. And it kind of went the wrong way.
People are like that.
People use, look, I didn't realize at the time when I was calling my shot that it was going to be bulletin board material for Clemson's. I thought it was going to motivate South Carolina to say, okay, yeah, we got some guys that believe in us.
No,
it didn't at all. It got really ugly really fast. And hats off to Clemson. They played better. I mean, they really should thank me. So, Clemson fans, you should really be thanking me.
So, I take it you're picking Georgia tomorrow on purpose.
Maybe so. I think Georgia is the best team in college football. They've been the best team. I forgot we actually had fans here. And I'll be straight up with you. Preseason, I said Georgia was going to win the SEC.
Yeah.
And I said that it was win or bust this year. They had to do it. They had to complete this whole thing, and they've set themselves up to be in that position. I love what Georgia's done defensively, offensively as well. They've been explosive. Stetson Bennett's really stepped his game up, and he's been clutch for them when they needed him the most. Stetson Bennett has either done it with his arm or his leg to get him a crucial first down, or has continued to set their team up for points.
So let's get inside the game tomorrow, because you know the conventional narrative is obvious. Georgia front, Alabama offensive line, Alabama running game. None of those narratives ever mention Will Anderson or anybody else or Bryce Young.
Right.
But if you had to, if you were appealing to Alabama people, which I know you are, give them the secret to winning this game.
The secret is stay strong where you're strong at. Or strongest at, and don't worry about the run game as much, or the lack thereof, or where your offensive line has had struggles in the previous couple weeks. I wouldn't worry about that at all. That's not going to be what determines this. For me, it's going to be all about Bryce Young. Bryce Young is your best chance to win this football game. Coming into it, I want to open it up. I want to take shots. I want to be aggressive offensively the whole game. I want Bryce Young to lead the charge. And if Alabama wants to win this game, Bryce Young needs to throw the ball 45 to 50 times. He needs to open it up. We need to cut him loose and just take the shackles off of him and say, let's go do it. And that young man, you are the guy to do it for us. And defensively, if you can get a turnover or two, if you get up on Georgia, how does Georgia react?
Right.
You have to be able to take Georgia into deep water to see if they can swim. That is the mentality, and that's what the focus is like we can't bat an eye. And no matter if Georgia's up or whatever, Alabama still has the belief that they can come back because they've done it before. And Georgia has not been put in a pressure cooker where they are thinking about something else late in any game. They've not been in that situation.
So yeah, I mean, you mentioned Bryce Young, and I'm thinking, I mean, certainly he's got a quick release. He's superb. So does that negate what is clearly Georgia's strength, or how does it negate it?
Well, how do you negate it is the speed and the matchups that you have on the outside. You like John Metchie versus some of the cornerbacks of Georgia. You like Jameson Williams matchup versus the corners of Georgia. So how do I dictate and make sure I get the matchups that I want first and second down when you know Georgia's going to maybe playing a little bit more man or some of their zone concepts? You have to be aggressive at those times. Don't just throw it and wait on it for third down. No. First down, second down, when those teams are running the football, they're trying to establish those things. That is when I want to be the most aggressive in my play calling. And sometimes doing the opposite of that, which is on third down, running a running back draw, not just throwing the football. So you have to do some different things that Georgia's not prepared for. And can you get just enough yards in the run game to at least keep them a little bit honest? Because I really want to throw the football, but I have to be able to run it just enough to say that, okay, it's second and seven, it's second and six. Those will dictate, because when you get second and six or second and four, defenses will get a lot more vanilla. They're going to play more man-to-man coverage in those situations. So that's the matchup that you want and anticipate to get, and that is when you're going to take your shot.
So you flip it over to Dan Lanning and Kirby Smart on the Georgia side. They know what they have. They know where they are weak. Mm-hmm. They have some weaknesses. How do you overcome that? I mean, what's your game plan from the first play?
Well, it's totally different mindset if you're Georgia. If Georgia, you're doing what we do. We are the best team. We've been the best team all year long. We don't bat an eye. We go out there and dictate and play this game on our terms. We're going to be out more physical than Alabama. We're going to hit them in the mouth, and defensively, we're going to fly around until they don't want anymore. And if we can fly around, make a turnover or two, and then we really get this thing going. And Georgia is so good because when they get up, they just choke teams out, like UFC style. They just choke them out. They have nothing left, and they run the ball, and they don't care about punting the football. They pin you back, and then they pin their ears back defensively and go get you.
Talking to Roman Harper here about the game. Roman, sometimes it is a mental game. I'm curious, not to spend any time on last week, but what was until the final drive, what was going on with Alabama?
It wasn't pretty. They weren't having any success. I think the crowd played a huge factor in that at Auburn. The offensive line were not getting off on the snap. Their defensive ends were getting up the field and getting to the quarterback at high
rate. They looked like Georgia for a while.
Yes, it was bad. And you got to understand that. In Alabama, they had way too many more penalties. They at one point in time, they had 129 yards in penalties. For every 100 yards of penalties, that equates to 7 points on the other side. So at 129, that's 8 or 9 points total. All right, Auburn had 10. Makes a lot of sense. Ball don't lie. Then after that, you were 5 for 17 on third downs, less than 30%. So you're not converting and stringing out, putting together drives. You were 0 for 4 on fourth down. You had one turnover. If they would have had two turnovers, Alabama does not win that game. Auburn turning the football over late. So Auburn helped Alabama out by throwing the football and again getting an interception, running out of bounds with Tank Bigsby not getting down. And then after that, Alabama won the football game on that 97-yard drive and in overtime. Up until that, it was Auburn's game the whole way. And being in that crowd, let me tell you what Auburn messed up on. They should have played swag surfing. That's what they should have did. The crowd would have been going off. If they would have played swag surfing when the fans were asking for it, I was there. They're asking for it, and they didn't play it, and they missed their opportunity. So, Auburn, you messed it up. You should have played swag surfing.
I'm speechless.
Thank you.
I didn't know Auburn winning that game was going to be that easy.
They had it. It was there for them. To win a game like that, you got to have help on both sides.
Yeah.
And Auburn helped them out do that. You don't just come back with that amount of time. You know, Auburn got the ball after that last fourth down stop with 2 minutes on the clock.
Right.
And Alabama got the ball back with a minute and 35 seconds left with a 40-second play clock. That just should not happen.
I mean, you play in the NFL. I mean, you played in the same team with Drew Brees, who's as good as anybody's ever been in a two-minute drill. I mean, have you – 12 plays. I mean, I was have you ever seen anything quite like that in college football?
No, and the way it did, well, the good thing about college is the clock stops after first down, so that gives them a little bit extra.
But still, 12 plays.
It was still great. I mean, and it still came down to some third down and fourth down situations. Right. It wasn't just Alabama just went straight down the field. It was some incomplete passes. It wasn't pretty. They got sacked and hit a little bit. He had to throw the football away sometimes. But when you needed it the most, Bryce Young and that offense showed up. And those wins like that will propel you later on down the year or in your career when you need it, because you have a sense of belief that no matter what it is, we won't waver. We can still win this game. All I got to do defensively is get my offense back on the field. And if you do that, Bryce Young and those guys can score.
As we close, we can pick the game tomorrow, whatever. But, I mean, do you have a reasonable feeling of confidence for Alabama tomorrow?
I'm not going to say it, Paul. You almost got me to say how I really feel, and I'm not going to do it. Not after what I did last week with – I'm not going to put that pressure on my boys. Just know it's going to be a great game.
In other words, no. You have no faith in Alabama tomorrow.
Don't you say that, Paul. You know I got faith in Alabama. Don't you say that. And I love Georgia, too. I really do. I love them as a team. I love what they've been doing. I just don't love them tomorrow. So it's going to be on. I can't wait. I literally can't wait.
Roman Harper, his weekly Friday visit. Thank you, Roman.
Thanks, Paul.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
We're back. We're live in Atlanta, and what a day it has been so far. The commissioner of the SEC and Jeff Foxworthy was here about 30 minutes ago. If you didn't hear what he had to say about Brian Kelly's attempt to speak Southernese, you missed something pretty hilarious. Let's get back to the calls at 855-242-7285. Augie down in the Big Easy. What do you got, Augie?
Paul, I was kind of upset there. Foxworthy says we have an accent in New Orleans? I've never heard that before. Do you agree with that? That sounds ridiculous.
I've always thought New Orleans sounded a little like a kind of a drawled Brooklyn.
Yeah, people say that, and they always wonder where it comes from. And there was an old rumor that it came from the fact that they were broadcasting Yankees games years ago, but I find that a bit far-fetched. Paul, when I saw Roman Harper play it in New Orleans with the Saints, which I think is the best thing he ever did in his life, I thought he looked like an old man. But sitting up there with you, the guy looks like a teenager. It's refreshing what getting out of football does, or is it sitting with you?
I think it's being with a young man like me, Augie.
That's what it is. And, Paul, Mr. College Football, he seemed a bit salty that the 6-6 LSU team stole the week's news cycle.
Yeah, I was just talking to Mark Kubiak during the break about that. I have known Tony for 35 years. I don't know if I've ever heard him as spitting fire about the state of college football. I mean, it wasn't like we have a problem. It's like we better take care of this. And I don't mean to be cynical, because I love Tony and have great respect for him, but I haven't heard anyone else all that concerned. Have you?
No, and I could tell you were taken aback, but then you kind of tried to soothe things over by sort of agreeing with him, but I wonder if it's more about the state of college football.
Listen, Augie, I agree it was the sport got another shot in the chops this week, but that's business as usual. I'm not concerned that it took anything away from the field, because that's just what happens. And college football wanted the early signing period. They're not going to walk that one back.
No, I absolutely agree. But, Paul, I learned something about you today. You listen to the Stern Show, so you know who Baba Booey is.
Oh, yeah. No, I've kind of run hot and cold with Stern. I don't know if I ever told you the story, Augie. Maybe I shouldn't say it on the air, but I will. In 2012, SiriusXM was trying to hire me. And I went to New York and met with the president of the company and all their top people. And they asked me, I was there all day, because I was going to end up doing our show from their studios, because there was no other way to get around it. And they said, is there anything you want? I said, I have one request. I want to see Stern's studio. And you know what? The president of SiriusXM, Scott Greenstein, had to call Howard Stern personally, because you cannot go in his studio. It's not like calling a friend. It's not like calling his wife. Howard has to say yes before you can open the door and go into the dungeon. And we ended up having lunch in there, and it was, I mean, I was thinking, I can't tell you how many porn stars had been there before me, how many famous Beatles, Rolling Stones, but it was, I ended up not taking the job, by the way. I came here, but it was still one of the most remarkable hours I've ever spent.
I was going to say, I would be hesitant if I were you, wanting to sit in any of the seats in Stern's office, knowing who's been in his office before.
If you sat down, you would not get up.
Wow, Paul, the commissioner, this guy says a lot without explicitly saying anything. I mean, his sentences are the most carefully constructed since the State Department, but it still seems like there are relationship issues between the commissioners. And it seems like what he's trying to do as he speaks to you is communicate to the other commissioners, trying to create some kind of maybe air of egalitarianism across the board with the other commissioners, because I don't know about you, but I still think there's a lot of angst about the technical.
Well, I agree. I hate to run. We're out of time. We still have 2 hours to go. We're live in Atlanta.